Welcome to our third support call. While I'm waiting for others to get on, I'm going to start with somebody that I know is here, which is Leslie, who submitted some questions. Be sure to submit questions for our last week's call, which will definitely be next week. There'll be no more delays. I'm back from Alaska. Thanks for your patience last week. So Leslie, your question was, what does mastery of the art of fear method fear practice look like? And there's a second longer version of this, but let me just go over this first. So just so you know, there's a mastery to being in flow. The art of fear method helps people get in flow with the things that they normally avoid. So there's a mastery of being in flow, but there's also a mastery of the art of fear method, which is whenever you feel stuck or whenever you feel like there's something just off in your day, like you're feeling argumentative, you're feeling down, you're feeling sad, you're feeling like you hate everybody, like anything that shows up that seems problematic, that's when you deploy it. And so the art of fear method is something that you deploy like when you have a problem. It's kind of like when you're constipated, you eat vegetables, or when your body is cramping, you do yoga. You know, just know that this is a solution to any time that you feel out of flow. Now, when you look at the examples I gave you, like you'll never be a master of yoga. You practice it. You're never going to eat enough vegetables, right? You actually have to make an effort. So this is something that you make an effort to engage in, or something that you practice. But there will never be a mastery of the art of fear method. Which brings us to your second question. Do you have any questions, though, on what I just outlined?
No, it makes sense, and it seems fairly intuitive. It's just that, you know, practice is hard, and sometimes it feels like you just are failing.
Yeah. You know, to expand on your question, you asked about the mastery of the art of fear method. There's a mastery to being in flow. And we'll explore that too, but let me outline your long version of the question, which I loved. I'm so glad you brought this up. You wrote, I've been struck since Kristen told a brief story in an earlier call about being on a plane, feeling anxious, and starting to do breathing exercises, etc., until she realized that wasn't the way to go. If the steps don't immediately come to Kristen when she's anxious, how does that bode for me being able to make a long-term consistent change in fear habits? So, look, there's no magical future for you. There's no magical future for me. To think that we'll ever arrive somewhere where we're always in flow with our lives is misguided. In Zen, there's a thing called an Enzo, and it can be spelled E-N-Z-O, but I think it's more often spelled E-N-S-O. And part of the Enzo, it's like this circle of life that is not connected at the bottom, you know, depending on how you paint it, but I see it at the bottom. And what this gap in the circle represents is that there's an imperfection to your practice. Like imperfection, delusion, relearning things over and over again, it's essential, it's inherent, it's just a huge part of our existence, this imperfection. Let me tell you a story to kind of bring this home. And I'm no Zen master, keep in mind as I tell this story. But it's about a monk meditating in a monastery who came to the head of the monastery one day and he said, I can't take it anymore. I have to leave. This isn't working for me. And the head of the monastery said, well, what's going on? He goes, well, I don't know if you heard it, but the Zen master was murdered last night, and he was screaming and yelling and begging for his life and whimpering like a baby, and I realized that my life has been a waste, you know, that if that's a Zen master's reaction to being murdered, like, this is clearly not going to take me any place where I'm going to ever be calm or sophisticated or just completely embracing my fate. And so the headmaster of the monastery said, well, is this practice a practice of not being human? Is this a practice of being insensitive? Absolutely not. So in this story, in this traditional story, then the headmaster talked the monk into staying based on this. But the bottom line is about this story, it goes back, I don't know, more than 1,000 years, is that we're sensitive to the influence of all things. Like, we're so sensitive to the influence of all the media and just social norms and what we're taught, ongoing taught. But, you know, you go online and you Google anxiety, you know, what's the first thing they have you do is breathing exercises or calm, replacing it with calm, or all the things that we're taught to do. It's like we're sensitive to these things. And what this story does and the Enzo depicts is that we have to just be on top of this at all times. Like, we have to constantly relearn to do this. We have to constantly remind ourselves to do it. Even I have to remind myself to do it, and I'm the one that created this 4-step Art of Fear method. You know, by teaching flow with all the 10,000 voices just doesn't make me automatically in flow with all the 10,000 voices. I have to constantly practice it. I still get in horrible arguments with my husband. I'm sure that if somebody tries to murder me, I'm going to scream like a baby, right? And be in resistance to life. Like, it's just a great question to illustrate how imperfect we are, how it's an ongoing practice, how we have to relearn the same thing over and over again at all times. And I say this all the time, that the 4-step Art of Fear method is very counterintuitive. Based on everything that we've been taught to do about fear and anxiety and on, depression, sadness, not getting along with other people, it's just completely counterintuitive. What's more intuitive is just to blame it on everybody else, feel like a victim, and be in resistance, especially all we've been taught. So I'll pause for a moment and give you a chance to ask clarifying questions, or if you have any more reflection on this, Leslie, please do.
No, thanks. That helps. It helps a lot. It seems like that all should be intuitive, and it's but it has helped to hear you talk about it in that way. So thank you.
Right. And for those who have gotten on this call late, she was asking what the mastery of the Art of Fear method looks like, and she was also saying, well, if I get on a plane and I immediately start to do breathing exercises or replace my anxiety with calm, just habitually, you know, long patterned, taught by everybody else, and it takes me a moment to catch myself and say, wait a second, oh no, don't do that. That's what we're talking about. And what I've learned that is, the more you practice this, and this will be my finale for it, is that you can either notice your stuck place long after the fact, months later even, you know, oh my gosh, I've been stuck in a repressive pattern again, and it's been 6 months, or you can notice right after, or you can notice during, or you can anticipate it. So let's just do a series of voices, and we'll just kind of land in each feeling momentarily. I won't ask questions. I just want you to feel the difference between all of these. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one noticing long after, and to keep it consistent, noticing that we're resisting emotions long after. And Leslie, you can play along. Who am I speaking to? You're noticing that you're resisting emotions long after the fact. Who am I speaking to?
The one who notices that we resist emotions long after the fact.
Right. Notice that I resist emotions long after the fact. Okay.
That I resist emotions long after the fact.
Right. So notice how you feel, your perspective. Maybe this could be the aha moment that came after working with me for the first time. It's like, oh, right? So notice the flavor of you. Have her be aware of you. Now shift again and allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who notices that I've been resisting emotions right after I did it. Who am I speaking to?
The one who notices that I resist emotions right after I did it.
Right. And notice the flavor of you. And you could be a second later, you could be a day later, you could be a week later. Allow me now, please, to speak to the voice of the one who's noticing I'm resisting emotions in the exact moment it's happening. Who am I speaking to?
The one who notices I resist emotions right in the exact moment that it's happening.
Just notice what it's like to be you. And notice that you're kind of an evolution that comes from practicing the Art of Fear method, that comes from just knowing what we know now, or what she knows now, about resisting fear and other emotions. You're more immediate. And you're the voice that occurred to me on the plane ride. Now, shift one last time. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who anticipates that I'm going to resist emotions before it happens. Who am I speaking to?
The one who anticipates that I'm going to resist emotions when they happen.
Right. Right. Like a family reunion's coming up. Oh, my God. Right. Mm-hmm. Before getting on a ski run that is pretty intense, that's going to be overwhelming. Notice the flavor of you. And even you can ultimately even be a conscious choice, you know, a coping mechanism. But the inside of you also gives another possible conscious choice. Like, maybe I'll try something different at the family reunion this year, right? Or maybe I'll try something different this next run. So just in conclusion, Leslie, anything that you want to add or say after having gone through this short exercise of four different perspectives?
No, it's helpful, particularly in being able to differentiate between those four voices, because they certainly have different intensities.
Yeah, and there are very different aha moments. You know, very different insights. Anything else on this subject from you or from anybody on the call? Okay, let's move on. Jaquetta, are you on the call?
I am on the call. Hello, Kristen.
Okay. So the remaining time that we have, and we may not take up all of it, is with your series of questions. So if anybody else on the call has a burning question that they want to add that they didn't have a chance to submit in advance, just know that there may be some time at the end, but this is kind of a big one, or a big series of questions that you asked. So before I get into it, though, Jaquetta, you asked a pretty heavy series of questions that includes suicide stuff from your past. Is this something that you really want to explore with a group listening, or is this something that you'd rather do privately? Because we do work together privately, one-on-one, you and I.
The suicide stuff removed, although sometimes I wonder if my current terror of death is fed by that in any way, like some sort of guilt. But the
Did I just lose you? I may have just lost you. Jaquetta, are you there? Okay. I'm going to wait for her to come on again.
That was unfortunate timing.
Oh, okay. Did somebody call you or something?
No, the call just dropped.
All right. You're back.
Yeah. I think this stuff is universal. I would imagine that it is. It might be spurred by the fact that I've, you know, had questions about wanting to be alive. And now I very much want to be alive, and I'm afraid of death, and I wonder what that means, and how do we deal with it? It is certainly fear. There's all sorts of, it just goes into all kinds of layers about the process of dying, what dying is after, what's the afterlife, and no, this is not a religious question at all. And also, I for myself, I can't ask that question and not also ask, by what measure do I value my life or evaluate my life, the quality of my life?
Let's break it down step by step, and let me just touch a little bit upon how suicide may have resulted in you having a greater fear of death maybe than you'd like, or maybe you feel is out of proportion to what other people experience, you know, thus that you asked the question. So, and I'm also glad that you brought up suicide because it has such a stigma and not many people are willing to mention it. I think that it's important that we have an open conversation about this kind of thing. I think that that's starting to appear more and more in the media, like, you know, celebrities coming out about this kind of thing. The latest one being Sansa Stark from Game of Thrones. I don't know that she was suicidal, but she was severely depressed and riddled with anxiety and all that. And so, you know, bravo for these heroes, some of them extremely young. I mean, she's, I don't know how old she is. Can't be more than 20. So, but my take on this, and tell me if you feel like this sounds true, but what leads to suicide, at least for a lot of us, and certainly for you, was you're fighting a war against fear for so long that it was causing tremendous suffering. And I love that questions get submitted in advance to me because it makes me look up subjects that I know very little about. And so I looked into this subject, and I know that suicide now is not necessarily about a desire to die, but a desire to make pain stop. And the solution, I read again and again, is connection. Which is why when someone's suicidal, we're supposed to ask them how they feel, what they feel, and we're also supposed to do that after the fact, too, not just pretend that it didn't happen. And so in many ways, just having this conversation with you now is very cathartic for just humanity, hopefully for you. Interesting for me, it's like, you know, asking how you feel and hearing you say, well, I feel very, very afraid of death, and then bringing the suicide, your past, into the conversation. It makes us talk about it, you know, say the word fear, say the word suicide, open up our hearts and eyes, you know, to be willing to talk about it, to own it, to connect to others, like as a way to connect to others. And the connection that you're looking for is not only the connection found in this group, the connection between you and me. You know, I believe that your past has made you connect more to skiing and more to the mountains, certainly. Like, you probably feel a more intense connection to that sport than most people who haven't had the past that you had. And here's the big one that I want to talk about, is this allows you, by asking these questions, to also connect to your fear. You know, if you hadn't gone through that, we probably wouldn't have found each other. You know, you probably wouldn't be on this journey. You probably wouldn't be on this call. Like, you are really, really hungry to connect to your fear. So right now you have fear of death. I mean, we all do on some level. Do you feel like your fear of death is greater than most?
Greater than most. I don't know. Again, I think it's pretty universal. And the way it's been manifesting as a thought for me is I'm really interested in life now. And it just seems kind of crappy that it's kind of coming at the end. I mean, who knows? I might make it another 20 years. I'll be 60 in June. So, I mean, people live a long time, but I might not either. I just seem more invested in life now. And, well, just that.
Then what's happening is likely that your past has made you and inspired you to be even more curious about your fear or ask about your fear of death. Well, most people wouldn't. And you're no longer suicidal, but you still have bad days like any of us. And your past is making you kind of look to be more in control of what your future will be like. And you, in the past, have really sought to not be connected to your fear. And your future is, you know that you need to connect to your fear. It's like you want to connect to your fear. So any fear that shows up, it's like, I want to make a connection to this. I want to be curious about this. Not only to avoid past problems, but because this is you embracing life, embracing fear, being curious about fear, connecting to it, you know, inspired to look into it, is you actually embracing life. Do you follow?
Yep, I do.
Right. Like, you have an intimate knowledge of being curious about fear that other people who have never been suicidal wouldn't have access to or wouldn't have connection to. And so that's the gift that you have from your past. And this curiosity is your, is showing up as your desire. It's like you're fostering this desire to connect to it so that you have a better future life. So that's the good news, right?
Okay.
And not all of us have that gift. I mean, whenever you go through any kind of tragedy, there's always multiple gifts, and this is one of them that come from it. So bravo. Any comments or questions from you, from anyone on the call? As for death itself, those of you that have worked with me for a while, at some point this comes up. I don't say it very often. Certainly during the ski camps I bring it up, that, or I allude to it, that death itself is here. It's like the best thing that ever happened to us, right? Because without our looming death, like without this being a finite experience, you know, then we wouldn't have such pressure or motivation to find meaning and purpose in our lives. You know, the clock is ticking. We need to make the most of it. I don't want to live, you know, without having contributed something. I want to live my most amazing life possible. I want to find meaning and purpose. Like, all of these things come from the fact that death exists. So then drop in fear of death and let's get curious about it. Now, fear of death can be just natural. It can be totally ignored. It can be natural, or it can be excessive. Like, there are people that won't leave their house, won't eat certain foods because they are worried that they're contaminated. They become germophobia. There's actually a word for excessive fear of death, thanatophobia. This I found out today. And excessive worry about your health is also showing up as fear of death, like people who have, what's the term? They're hypochondriac. You know, that's part of thanatophobia. But I don't think that that's what we're dealing with here, Jaquetta. Is that true?
That's not what we're dealing with.
Right. And people who haven't gone through this work and then come to terms with fear and other, you know, quote, bad parts of life, you know, this thanatophobia can be triggered by past trauma that has come from suicide attempts. This is totally different. So with that in mind, allow me, please, Jaquetta, to speak to the voice, your brave soul, of fear of death. Who am I speaking to?
I am fear of death.
So very specifically, you're the voice of fear, but today we're having you look at this one thing. You know, we could speak to the voice of fear of mannequins. We could speak to the voice of fear of snakes. We could speak to the voice of fear of success, fear of failure, fear of rejection, but you are specifically fear of death. And so I want you to just shine your light on the things that you're afraid of regarding death. Tell me, what do you see?
Oh, there's so much. First and foremost, it's that Jakarta simply won't be in. But also, what is this process dying? It can arise in terrible ways. And then what?
Are you more afraid of having a horrendous death or fear of dying than of death itself?
All of it.
All of it. The death process. What happens while it's happening? How is it going to happen? When is it going to happen? And is that it? Is that the end of Jakarta? Period. Are your fears, they seem like, it's like the ultimate natural fear to have. And yet it doesn't seem like many people, I don't want to use the word focus on this specific aspect. Do you focus on it that much as a voice of fear?
Have been lately.
Why?
It's unavoidable, and everybody knows it.
It meaning death or you?
Both.
Focusing on fear of death.
Death.
Okay.
Is unavoidable. But it's a fine line between accepting and ignoring.
Are you more prevalent as people age?
Yes.
Are you more prevalent in people that have had a lot of near-death experiences?
I don't know about others. I know about Jakarta.
Okay.
How
are you showing up in Jakarta? What's happening? Why are you kind of starting to focus your lens on this particular subject? And inevitability.
Well, I am inevitable. Or death is inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a little cavalier about death before. Or just sort of mildly sad about it. But I show up a lot for her because she kind of doesn't want, she wants me to go away because of not wanting to lose this experience with her life that she's been having these last few years.
Right. So she's clinging to her embracing of life, and she's in repulsion to you.
Pretty much.
Whenever somebody resists a voice, there's always a counterbalance where they're embracing another or being drawn to another. It becomes a tug of war. Is she in resistance to you then?
She's in resistance to me.
All right. That's her trend with fear, you. And you come in, you have many different focuses, and maybe she can start to embrace you while skiing or while going through knee surgery, but when you show up in this form, she goes back to habitual patterns around you. Is that what's going on?
I don't know.
Well, let me give you a counterbalance example that kind of goes on what we explored first with Leslie's questions. You know, what does it mean to be in flow with your life? Kristen hasn't ever had to use the art of fear method around me with this, but there has been a distinct curiosity around me. When she turned 50, which was 2 years ago, Kristen's 52, I showed up kind of for the first time in her life with my focus being on death. Because at age 50, she was no longer the old side of young, she was the young side of old. And for the first time in her life, even with all those near-death experiences, even with watching people die in the mountains, even with having loads and loads of friends die doing the sports that she used to love that were very death-defying, it never even occurred to her that, you know, there was something to be afraid of. You know, it never even occurred to me. Like, I just wasn't focused on that. And she was also really good at repressing me. And anyway, we have this whole history. But all of a sudden, she turns 50 is the point, and I show up. And I show up in a big way. And she's like, whoa, where'd you come from? You're new. And she's been curious about me ever since. And so in many ways, Kristen was very psyched to see this on the call, that this was going to be what we're going to explore, because she's curious about me. So as the voice of fear of death, you don't know how Jaquetta feels about you. Is she curious about you, like Kristen's curious about me?
She's just really freaked out by me.
She's just really freaked out.
Yeah.
So is she afraid of you?
Yes.
Okay.
She's
so now
afraid
this is
of me specifically.
Right. Now everybody really pay attention to what I'm about to say, because it took me, as Kristen, the facilitator, to figure this, it took me forever to figure this out. But it's your job to be afraid. And Jaquetta is not the one that's afraid. It's you who are afraid. It's your job. So you are fearing your own self. You are fearing your own fear of death as the voice of fear. So you're no longer just the fear of death. You're the one who fears the fear of death, right? So who am I speaking to?
I'm the one who fears the fear of death.
Right. So what is the bigger issue to you, fear, or the death itself, or the inevitability of death itself in this moment?
And it's still a tie, both.
Okay.
Both. Kind of all of it at once. It's a lot. I'm a lot.
Right.
I'm a lot.
Let's break it down just click by click. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of fear of fear. Who am I speaking to?
I'm the voice of fear of fear.
And keep in mind, for all who are listening, we could have gotten to this place, whether we were exploring snakes, or failure, all of that. So just be fear of fear. And just sit for 20 seconds in silence and just be you. Notice how you feel. Notice if this was an exercise, just being you, of the mind focusing on fear, or if it was just a feeling. You know, if you showed up as thoughts, if you showed up as just a feeling. You know, in many ways, this voice, you, is the crux, kind of the centerpiece of all that I teach around fear. So how are you showing up as fear of fear?
Kind of a tightness in the body, no movement, holding very still, very shallow breathing, almost trying to hide.
Yeah. Is this the feeling, are you the feeling that Chiquetta's been worried about?
No.
Okay.
I'm
well, what do we do
it.
With you? You know, part of it, you're part of it.
I'm part of it.
So what do we do with you? Go ahead. Sorry, I keep interrupting. What were you going to say?
I'm part of what she's afraid of.
Okay. Well, again, she's afraid. She's afraid. So there's fear of fear of fear, right? We can keep going.
Yeah.
Right? And it just goes deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. You know, what, FDR, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this. You're a part of our lives. You know, in part, taught, you know, by the whole conquer, overcome crowd, by habitual patterns, and also we are, I think, just innately bred to just be afraid of everything, of snakes, of tsunamis, of death, and even of fear. So you're innate. Just, I want you, you know, and here's where the real juice comes from, is just to notice the relationship that the self has with you. It'll always come back to that with shadow work. You know, what is the relationship that the self has with you, you know, such that you've cast a shadow, such that you've caused problems in her life? Can we be in flow with you? Is she ever in flow with you? Does she notice that, you know, 6 months after the fact, like we just explored, that, oh, she hasn't been in flow with you for the last 6 months? Can she notice right after the fact that she hasn't been in flow with you? Can she notice during the moment that you show up? Can she anticipate you? Is there anything else that you'd like to say as fear of fear, or any advice that you'd like to give to Chiquetta?
No.
Okay, now let's go one click in another direction. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of fear of dying. Who am I speaking to?
Fear of dying.
Okay. 20 seconds. And, you know, there's going to be, you know, this, you are going to take on many forms, like fear of dying a horrendous death, fear of dying a painful death, fear of just dying in general. Like, just notice how you show up, and whatever kind of your most grandiose, you know, version of you is probably going to be what shows up. 20 seconds. And notice, too, if there's like a blockage. Like, for me, there's a disconnect between Kristen and me. And she couldn't really go there. It's like, it was like a gray experience for her. She didn't feel anything. She just blanked out. You know, notice if that showed up. And if so, then you have evidence of what the self's reaction is to you. If the self, like, dove into you, you know, like a, like diving into a swimming pool. If the self, like, exaggerated you, you know, to be dramatic and feeling like a victim. Like any reaction or any kind of experience that was just had in the last 20 seconds can be a very, very powerful and poignant and profound insight into the self's reaction to you. So what was it like for you? Fear of dying. Who am I speaking to? Is there sadness? Are you overwhelming to her?
Yeah, pretty much.
Right.
She freezes.
Okay.
And words are hard.
Say that again?
Words are hard.
Right. Okay. And sometimes having a voice be here and the self's reaction to it, the only thing that I ask is that it's you that's here, not Jaquetta's reaction to you. We got to keep that separate. And the reason is I need to know what voice I'm speaking to. And if it's the voice of Jaquetta's reaction to you, I want to know that. So who am I speaking to? Is it you or is it Jaquetta's reaction to you?
Jaquetta's reaction to me.
Right. So fear of dying, I think that we still have Jaquetta's reaction to you, which is a different voice. You know, who should I ask to speak to? Jaquetta's reaction to you? Or should we stay with fear of dying?
Fear of dying.
Okay. So notice that Jaquetta's reaction to you was overwhelm. So the voice of overwhelm showed up, inability to speak. Back to you, who am I speaking to?
The fear of dying.
Right. Why does she react that way to you? Why does the voice of overwhelm show up after you?
She doesn't know what to think about me. I'm this big, heavy-duty unknown.
I want to introduce something big to the conversation. I said before that death itself is here to help us find meaning and purpose in our lives, to motivate us to do things. I see fear as a great motivator as well. There's also fear of death. And let's go there now. Well, let me think about this. What I'm proposing is that you, fear of dying and fear of death, I wonder if you aren't here to ignite a spiritual practice for her. To kind of speed up the meaning and purpose, to speed up the desire to die a beautiful death. Anyone that's read the Tibetan book of Living and Dying will desire that. I feel like death and the fear of death and all of that is actually the fire under our butts. Like you are the fire under her butt to align herself at the next level. Is that what you could possibly offer her?
I can do that.
Is she willing to listen to you, or is she in resistance to you? Or is she just doesn't even know what to do with you?
She's in resistance to me, and she just doesn't know what to do with me. I'm kind of getting in the way.
Of?
Her enjoyment of her life.
Why are you showing up? Are you here to just cause problems for her?
No.
Are you here to ruin the last 20 years of her life?
I don't know how long she's got. No one does.
What merit do you offer her? What do you offer her? What's your wisdom?
She wonders what value her life is.
That's a good question to ignite. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of fear of death. Who am I speaking to?
I'm fear of death.
When you show up in people's lives, when you show up in Jaquetta's life, if you want to keep it to the personal view, what are you supposed to offer humanity? What are you supposed to offer her?
You better know what matters.
Ah.
You better know what matters in your life.
Yeah.
It's probably not the best to go out of here with regret.
Yeah. Like, when I showed up in Kristen's life, I mean, at this point, she's only been curious about me. Like, why am I showing up so much? I mean, she's, probably once a week at least, she's like, huh, I wonder if I'm going to die today. I better say goodbye to Kirk in a loving way so that if he never sees me again, then that'll be the last memory. Like, she has these thoughts. Never had these before. You know, and this happens weekly since she turned 50. She hasn't told anyone, you know. I've showed up in her life. And it's like I'm like a reminder that the clock's ticking. You're now the young side of old. Like, you can do better than this. Get your shit together. Be more considerate to Kirk, right? Make your life matter more. Like, all of these things is what I offer. You know, there's a delusion found in every single voice. And usually the delusion, like the horrible side, only comes if a voice is locked in the basement and resisted and ignored, all of that, it'll torment them. But the universe is designed perfectly. The universe works if you let it. You are showing up for a reason in her life. And if you're owned and honored, that reason will become more and more clear. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of owned and honored fear of death. Who am I speaking to?
I am owned and honored fear of death.
Okay, now spend 20 seconds just being you. Now, you're still an uncomfortable feeling, but how is her reaction different?
Well, she's willing to listen to me.
Okay. Is she overwhelmed by you?
She certainly takes notice of me.
Is she afraid of you, are you afraid of yourself anymore?
I have her attention.
Right. So tell her what you want her to know.
I don't know if you have 24 hours or 24 years left. I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball. It's up to you what you do with whatever time it is.
Right. And how important is the 24 hours? How important is the 24 years? Like, this is it. This is her, I guess, last hurrah.
She still wants to do a lot. I keep telling her now is the time.
Any other advice?
It's reasonable to be afraid.
Okay. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of death. Who am I speaking to? And I don't want to speak to Jaquetta's reaction to this voice. I want to speak to the voice of death. Not the moment of death, but it's over. It's complete. Who am I speaking to? Yeah. And it's hard to go there. I know that there'll be a reaction to it. But this is not about the reaction. And you know, my teacher, let me just lead you into this more gently. My teacher led me one day, it had to have been 15 years ago, into a spiritual death of taking us through great doubt, a room full of people, you know, great doubt, doubting it all, and then great death, like death of our egos, and then great, great death that actually took us into just the emptiness that is taught in Zen, the no mind, nothing. And it might be easier to just name you great death because it has the word great before it. You know, it could be easier to just call you emptiness, but there's a kind of a assumption in that. You know, we have no idea. But I do know that the Buddha said we have within us the wisdom to be anything that we want to be and to have an awareness of anything we want to have an awareness of. And so as difficult as this may seem at first glance, this can actually be a absolutely gorgeous moment. And my mother had a brother who died for about a minute and came back. And we've all heard stories of this. And the brother said, oh, don't ever be afraid of death. It's absolutely wonderful. I mean, that's the only notification we've got about what this will feel like. But if you are not in resistance to it, if you're in resistance to this next voice, it'll be a horrible experience. It'll be overwhelming. You'll be like, no, 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 you know. But if you just become it without some sort of preconceived notions about what it is or some stigma around it, you can just maybe see some things that we otherwise can't see in our everyday relative existence. Are you willing to go there? Or would you rather not?
Well, then go there.
All right. So allow me, please, to speak to the voice of Jaquetta's reaction to the voice of death. Who am I speaking to?
I'm Jaquetta's reaction to the voice of death.
Are you the voice of death?
No.
Okay. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of preconceived notions about what it means to be dead. Who am I speaking to?
The voice of preconceived notions about what it means to be dead.
Okay. Are you the voice of, I don't even know that I want to call it death anymore. Just wherever you are, 5 minutes after the deed is done. Are you that voice?
No.
Okay. Because I don't know what else to call it. Allow me just please to speak to the voice of death. 5 minutes in, just for kicks. Who am I speaking to? No words. Notice if there's resistance. Notice if there's still emotion, in which case we're not there. This is pretty heavy for a group call.
Yeah, I can't do it.
Okay.
It's nothing to do with if anybody's still even left on the call.
Everybody's still here, right? So then my guess is what we're dealing with is this. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of resistance to death. Who am I speaking to?
Resistance to death.
All right. Suffering equals discomfort times resistance. If you can find a way to lower your resistance, even a little bit, by honoring your fear when it shows up, by honoring your fear of fear, by honoring your fear of death, honoring your fear of dying, you know, by having a Zen approach to your fear, a new form of fear that showed up that is new, that's particularly poignant, you know, if you can lower your resistance from, I mean, what is your level of, you know, how strong are you showing up 1 to 10 as resistant to these voices?
I don't know.
I mean, my intention isn't to torture Jaquetta, right? My intention is to give her some insights. And, you know, I don't know that we should leave you on the table right now. Do you have anything that you want to say to Jaquetta or anything that you want to say to these other voices that we've spoken to?
No.
I mean, you could say, I hate you all, death to you all, like, I'm going to ignore you all, you know, but you have a right to exist.
Well, it's kind of interesting that you wanted to talk to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. You
know? Why?
Well, I don't get many calls.
Right.
Nobody wants to talk to me.
Mm. Jaquetta's trying to get rid of resistance, right? Trying to get rid of you.
Right.
And this practice is not about getting rid of you. And I'm thinking maybe her practice should be to go back to exploring you first and foremost before even going down the rabbit hole of these others any further.
I'm a very tight, difficult place to be.
Right, okay.
It's hard to resist the inevitable.
Right. Does she resist you? Or do you resist yourself then? You know, we're like really unwrapping this. And we're back to the fear of dying, maybe the resistance to the resistance of the fear of dying. I mean, it's, you know, I like how we can just go and just like sharp little, you know, like turning the dial on a radio station and just listening to this channel for a while. But as the voice of resistance to all of this, are you also in resistance to yourself because of what she's been taught by me? You know, that's another question.
I don't know.
This
is hard to follow.
Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of Jaquetta. Who am I speaking to?
This is Jaquetta.
Okay. Well, that's a freaking crazy rabbit hole we just went down. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Was this a torture fest, or did you get something out of this?
I definitely got something out of it, but it was very uncomfortable.
Okay.
It was uncomfortable.
You know, I wonder if the ikigai for you, you know, the reason for being, like the thing that, you know, it was, I believe that cosmically we're, and I don't know if you believe this, Jaquetta, but that cosmically we're all here to learn something important in this incarnation. You know, that's my personal belief, and it may be more than one thing. I don't know. I don't know if you even believe the same thing I do, but if you do, I wonder if learning how to be comfortable with being uncomfortable isn't your ikigai.
That makes sense. It certainly fits me.
Yeah.
I have a great deal of issues with it.
Yeah.
Being comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is kind of like pouring a glass of water and it's all foggy and then you got to just let it sit and then it'll become more and more clear. And, you know, we have next week too. We also, you and I work together one-on-one privately. So I'm sure this is not going to be the last time we explore this, but for now, let's just let this glass of water settle until things become more clear.
Yes, please.
Okay. Do you have anything else you want to ask or add, or do you need a cigarette and a, like a long nap? I know you don't smoke. Do you need some ice cream, cake, and a long nap?
I think just walking out into the cool evening is probably going to be a welcome thing.
Right. So one thing with working with me is always going to be profound, and we're always going to go as far as you're willing to let me take you. How is that for anyone else that's on the call? Any comments, questions? In many ways, a lot of religions out there have some sort of answer for what happens after you die, because when you're exploring spirituality, that gets put on the table. You know, what's the big picture? And I feel like in so many ways, fear showing up in our lives ignites a psychological practice, it ignites an emotional practice, it ignites a physical practice, like what's going on in my body. And the big one, is it ignites a spiritual practice. So the conclusion I have is when you have a fear of dying, you know, it's kind of like it happens for me, it seems, more as you get older or when you go through a cancer or something that, you know, near-death experience. That's often what ignites a spiritual practice, like waking up to just figure out what the bigger experience is, which often involves the question, you know, what happens after I die? You know, how can I manifest the best quality of remaining life? All of these things get ignited when fear shows up. And I have to say in conclusion that since turning 50, my own fear of dying has made me feel more present and more aware of my choices and really made me want to make the most of what I have left. And maybe it's would work for you too. And it comes by embracing it. And oh my gosh, I would love to at some point go further down the rabbit hole of like the voice of dying, not just 5 minutes in, but 30 minutes in, an hour in. Like, I think that would be a really interesting journey I've never gone on. If anybody wants to submit that next week, anybody who dares, or work with me privately to explore that, I think that there would be something really interesting to be found even further down that rabbit hole. With that, I put my hands together and bow to you all. Thank you for engaging in consciousness practice with me today, you brave, brave souls, especially the ones that had no idea what you were getting into today. Thank you. And I'll talk to you next Monday.
Thank you, Kristen.
Okay, thank you. Good job. I'm proud of you.